I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good. Good choice.
Yeah, I just roll with it.
There's too much to talk about, probably, anyway.
Exactly.
Let's get to business here.
Yeah.
Paul Hamilton on the West Her Hotline. Paul, you've had a long day.
It's okay. I mean, it's actually the last hockey day of the year for me.
Yeah, that's right.
Of this season. Now, we'll be picking up fairly soon with the Combine. That'll be coming up, and of course the draft, so that'll be coming up in just a little bit over a month. So it's not as long of an off season as it used to be.
And you don't have any Amherst playoff games to fall back on, because the Sabres played for five extra weeks or four extra weeks, or whatever it was.
So it's all been new. I got a little Bisons to do yet, though,
which
is good.
Yep.
A week from Saturday, I'll be over at the ballpark doing a ball game.
And the NHL draft is in Buffalo. If people didn't know that, so you'll be here for that. Mm-hmm. What's the most interesting thing you heard today?
Oh, the most interesting. Well, that the Lindy Ruff contract extension was already done. Not that I didn't expect it. I absolutely expected it. But it was already done and taken care of. And basically, for Lindy Ruff, the only thing was it had to be. He needed to go home and talk to his, quote, assistant coach, which is his wife. And she basically told him, you have a sickness and you need to do it. So let's go. You need to do it. So he was more than happy to accept the 2-year offer.
Next time he should refer to her rightly as the head coach.
Right. You're the assistant.
She's not his assistant.
Let's get the hierarchy straight here. I thought it was interesting that both men that just spoke, Jarmo Kekalainen, the GM, and Lindy Ruff, the head coach, both just pretty much called their shot on 3 goalies next year, it sounds like to me. At least they're at least interested in exploring it.
Well, there's a new rule.
I didn't know this nugget about the e-bug. I think, just to be clear, I don't know all the ins and outs of that. But an NHL goalie who's played NHL games cannot be your e-bug. So if there has to be an e-bug, they would still have to have something on the side. But if they want to carry 3 guys, like Lindy said, if someone gets sick or even a second guy gets sick and you're really stuck, you want to have a guy around. There were 5 teams this year that began the year. The beginning of the year is always a little tough because, some teams are hanging on to a guy. They don't want to slip them through waivers, maybe later, whatever. But 5 NHL teams this year on opening night had 3 goalies on their roster. And I don't have a way to find out, other than combing through game notes copiously from all year for every team, how many teams did it as often as the Sabres, like basically all year. Once they had Ellis, they carried 3. But it is becoming, there's a lot of things that are changing goaltending trend-wise. Shared crease, 1A, 1B, which the Sabres did, again, even to have 3. So I think maybe a lot of old standards are going by the wayside, or slowly but surely, in the NHL with that.
I knew all about the e-bug, but I didn't think of this. What Lindy Ruff and Kekalainen are talking about, that, well, you just carry 3 goalies and you can get around it. And they felt, I think circumstances allowed it to work for them this year. It was kind of weird that you'd have an injury and then that injury healed up before the next injury came. You never really had 2 injuries. And it just all kind of fell into place for them throughout the season with that. But now that I'd almost guarantee you they're going with 3. I mean, they didn't say for sure. They said it's definitely an idea, but they like Ellis. They thought it worked better than maybe they anticipated it was going to work. But the e-bug thing makes all the sense in the world that you would want. They don't want to lose Ellis anyway, and you would want a third goaltender that's competent, because there were situations this year. I can think of 2 in particular where the third goaltender was up in the stands or up in the press box, and he had to come down and dress.
That's right.
Interestingly enough, he cannot sit on the bench.
Right.
Which I find very interesting.
Even once the other goalie has left. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
He can't.
He can dress.
Yep.
But he's got to sit in the locker room, which is what both Lyon and Lukanen did the two times it was done. They both sat in the locker room dressed, ready to go if they had to be put in. But I would do this too, I think, now that I have the idea in my head. I just, as I told you, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And I think it is definitely the way to go now, and I bet you a lot of teams will do this.
If that ends up being a one-for-one switch out, like if you have a third guy and you can just do that, what I'm wondering is if there's a new e-bug rule, whether or not you need to have that guy, or if you have a third guy on the roster, can he just come down and get the gear on? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that has to be made clear, and I'm not sure that I, from either guy, but the way they're talking, it sounds like they think they can do this that instead
because
of that.
They wouldn't be talking about it if they couldn't. Right. Now you may still have to have that e-bug in the building, a fourth guy. Maybe every team has to have an e-bug in the building.
That's what I
don't know.
Yeah, right.
So he may still have to be in the building, but you don't have to put him in as the third guy if you have three goalies. You have three goalies, and the number three guy would be the guy sitting there waiting to come in, and if he had to get to a fourth, then it's the e-bug.
Right.
E-bug, by the way, because we don't all know this term, emergency backup goalie. It might be an acronym that we all know by next year, given this development.
That's right. Good point. It has been a while. Toronto, to much acclaim, had to put one of these guys into a game against Carolina back in 21, 22. I don't remember the year now.
Did Carolina have to do it too? There have been two instances.
Oh, I think that might be right. Another team did do it. Yeah, but Toronto put the guy in
pretty sure Carolina did it.
Carolina put him in. It was Carolina in Toronto. The guy was the Marley Zamboni driver, and he went in, and Carolina won the game with him in goal.
Very nice. Yeah. Sounds like it should be an electric Volkswagen, but e-bug is now a hockey term.
All right, enough on the goalie stuff, although there's a lot there, but we'll have other times to get to it.
But I think we now have clarity of what we'll probably see next year.
Right. On Tuck, Mike noticed it first. Thought Kekalainen was very careful with his words about Tuck, because it sounds like, you know, yes, of course, he's important, and we love him, but, you know, it's got to work for us, too.
Does the contract make sense to make the team better?
Right.
Is how he put it.
Yeah.
And you know what? He has said that before. And, what he means is, you know, does it make sense to him to have a 7, 6, 7, 8 year contract, you know, for a 30-year-old player? Does that make your team better? You know, and maybe it does. But I think, you know, those are the types of things. Because this doesn't necessarily have to be about money. This could be, all right, we'll give you the money, but how about 3 years? Or how about 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the average of the thing. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. The years could be the hang-up. If I were the GM, that would be the thing hanging me up a little bit.
Sure.
Is the years. I think I'd still be doing it, and maybe I'm an idiot for doing it, because for signing a 30-year-old like that, but I think it's something that he's a big part of this team. But that would be what I would be worried about, is the years more than the actual amount.
We didn't get really much from Tuck on injuries. He used the word nuisances to describe his health. You say how it's the last hockey day of the season. Let's make this the last injury report of the season, because Kekalainen gave out some interesting information. Want to run that down?
Yeah, Carrick came back too soon, which we kind of thought had happened. Danforth had to have a second surgery after busting his kneecap. So that meant 4 games, and that was it for him. Kulik revealed yesterday that he had to go to the Mayo Clinic to have that removed instead of having it dissolve. So it was actually removed, which means he will be able to continue his career. Owen Power was a grade 3 sprain, I believe it is, going
ankle,
by memory
ankle
here.
Ankle sprain, yeah.
Ankle sprain. And you want people, if anybody is questioning his toughness, try go playing a hockey game on a grade 3 ankle sprain.
That's the most severe.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought he played very well.
Yes, yeah, me too.
Going through it. So. Yep.
Wow.
You know, kudos to him. And
Stanley?
Stanley, yeah. It was revealed Stanley was fighting an injury that he was worse than he let on.
Then how about Thompson, and Paul, by the way?
Was the back injury. He said it was his lower back, said he probably shouldn't have answered the question the way he did, but there was emotion after a game, and, you know, but again, and I don't care how he answered the question. It didn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm to a point here, nothing surprised me in the locker room. I take nothing personally. Things happen. People are upset after games. You got people firing questions at you right after a game that maybe you didn't play real well in. I get the whole thing. But anyway, you know, he kind of thought maybe he shouldn't have answered the question that way.
Well, he was playing through something like we suspected.
Yes. Right. And that's why he did. It was like he was angry because of the game. He thought he played that well. And now I'm sitting there asking about, are you injured? And, you know, we got, I don't feel it's any of your business. And fine, that's fine. Maybe it's not. And let's move on to the next question. I didn't take offense to it at all.
Paul, time is going to get tight here, but not that these things are all like connected, but how cautious Kekalainen was talking about Tuck and that contract, he sounded the opposite about signing Bo Byram to a long-term extension. I mean, he sounds excited to like get his name on a contract for the next 7 or 8 years.
And Benson.
Yeah.
And he may feel that it's more important to have those four defensemen for years than having Alex Tuck for years. I mean, maybe it's got to be a choice. Because if they don't make a trade and they sign both of them, I don't see how they can. I think they got to move people to be able to sign both of them. So maybe it's this guy or the other guy. We can't do both. Unless you move some people. And so that might be part of it, too, that they're trying to figure out.
Okay, Paul. Long day. Good job. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
There's our Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. His appearances here on WGR brought to you by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this.
You know, I'm wondering if in my family people will take the attitude Paul did if I go home and take a question and say, I don't think this is any of your business. And maybe my wife or kids will be like, hey, that's fine. I'm not offended. I'm cool. Maybe it's not.
And I'll be on Twitter. Who had to ask that question? Why are you asking that question? Why are you making Mike mad?
What's for dinner? I don't think that's any of your business. How about you come into the kitchen and see for yourself?
Yeah.
Why should I have to tell you? That doesn't really set a good tone.
You'll get there in a few years.
I'll ask my daughter how school was today. I don't think that's any of your business.
I don't even get asked anymore. Like if my wife's not there, the kids are just making food when I get home. They don't even like, hey, you got a dinner plan? They know it's dad. No, probably not. He's going to make a BLT for himself when he comes home. That's what he's going to do.
I cooked today and gave you some.
It was delicious.
Porcini ragu.
It was very good.
Porcini mushroom ragu.
Yeah.
With tagliatelle pasta.
Had a little zing in there. It was
a little amuse-bouche for Bulldog here today. In a little container.
Very nice.
Very proud of myself for that. Vegetarian dish. That goes well. I don't think that's any of your business.
I wouldn't have known.
I don't think that's any of your business. What's in it?
Well, I enjoyed it.
And thank you for not taking offense. Lindy Ruff today on the occasion of not only the end of the season, this is the typical part, but his contract extension. We'll give you the Sabre coach's comments next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sadly, we've got a little while until the next Sabres game.
I can't ask Paul about if they're going to win tonight or not.
We're going to be a little while here. But
what am I doing with my life?
We go to the Wester Hotline. Paul Hamilton does join the show after what was a very, very busy day yesterday down at the arena. Paul, how are we doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. And yeah, what you guys got started at like 8 in the morning, and when did Kekalainen wrap up speaking? Like around like 5:30-ish?
Yeah.
Long day.
Yeah, it was.
So we'll start from the end with Kekalainen. I thought there was a lot of interesting things he had to say, and I kind of want to start with where I think maybe the offseason begins, especially now that Lindy Ruff's extension is already done, 2 years, that's in the bag, is the Alex Tuch situation. I thought yesterday Kekalainen couldn't wait and was glowing when he's talking about Zach Benson and Bo Byram and wanting to bring them back. But with Tuch, he seemed a little more measured. Is that kind of the sense you got there too?
Well, as he mentioned, you know, they need to find a contract that can help make them better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I think he means by that is, you know, it has to be a contract that allows them to sign Benson, you know, keep a lot of their players. You know, if Tuck's contract is crazy high, then they're going to have to get rid of somebody because they're not going to be able to, you know, sign everybody and keep them. So I think that's what he means by that. So, you know, neither side, Tuch nor Kekalainen, made it sound like anything's imminent. I mean, Tuch basically said whether it was Adams or Kekalainen, the negotiation really didn't go anywhere. And so, you know, they've got a little over a month now. There's plenty of time to figure out, you know, if they can find common ground.
I wonder too, Paul, if maybe the big sticking point here is, you know, we're dealing with it now. Josh Allen turned 30 today, so we're having those discussions of, oh no, maybe the end is coming for the Bills and for Allen. But for Tuch, it's the same thing. He's 30, and this is his first chance at free agency. And I do wonder if he's sitting here in this situation of, I need an 8-year contract. He mentioned it yesterday in his exit press conference, wanting to do what's best for him and his family. And maybe the Sabres are more in the line of a 4 or 5 year contract to leave open that opportunity. I mean, it's other things as well, right? The Jeff Skinner buyout, I think next year is like a $6.5 million cap hit. You've mentioned the players they've got to sign back as well. They may want to do things in the offseason. I mean, this is a general manager that at least got far enough in a Robert Thomas discussion for a report to get put out there from the national sources. So I think it's also, you know, a bunch of things that maybe are holding them back with Tuch.
Yeah, and you're right. It could be years that we're talking about. Maybe they're okay with the money. They're not okay with the years. We just don't know what exactly the sticking points are. We don't know, you know, if what we've read is right, you know, that the Sabres are down under $9 million and Tuch wants more towards $11 million. And, you know, we don't know if that's right. So, what's good for Tuck's family? We don't know, and nor is our discussions he has with his family any of our business. I mean, we have no idea what that is, and if there's somebody that would like to move or that type of thing. So there are a lot of different variables that we just don't know about. It could be anything as far as that goes. And as Tuch said, he has some decisions to make in the next month or so.
Paul, one of those other things that I kept thinking about was there could also be no move clauses of, you know, players like that are going to hit unrestricted free agency are probably going to hit a full no move for a good portion, if not for the entirety of the contract, and then it downgrades to like modified no trade clauses. And maybe the Sabres don't have room for that sort of lack of maneuverability for a player that would be getting older on the roster as well. But it just does seem like when it comes to talking about Byram or Benson as opposed to Tuch, it does look like the team has their price point that they're comfortable with, and now it is going to be a matter of if they test the market with Tuch and his agent, will they see what they're looking for? Will they find what they're looking for? And if not, could they come back? It sounds like that window is open, but it does need to be something the team can fit under the cap.
Well, being the number one free agent and being how July 1st is stupid time in the NHL, he will absolutely get what he wants somewhere. I mean, there's somebody will pay it. It happens every year. There's zero question in my mind. I think his agent knows, and he knows that if it is a money thing, they'll get the money. If it's not here, it'll be someplace else.
Yeah, Paul Hamilton here on the Western Hotline. Paul, I do want to go to the goalies here because we've talked about it a lot, the 3-goalie rotation. It looks like it's not going anywhere, it appears, especially with now this e-bug rule, the emergency backup goalie. They think they may be able to kind of keep working that with Colton Ellis next year.
Yeah, it never even occurred to me what they were talking about. I knew the e-bug thing,
mm-hmm.
But they're right. I mean, really a solution to it, and I think a solution that many teams will probably use, is you can use three goalies, have three goalies on your roster. And the Sabres had it last year, and it sounds like that's the direction they're headed in. What I'm not clear on is, do you still have to have an E-Bug anyway, even if you have a third, and which would make it a fourth goalie? Because you definitely will be able to use your third there. But the Sabres didn't use it, but you know, got to the point where they had to dress the goaltender twice this year, where there were injuries. Lukanen came down once, and Lyon came down once from the press box and actually dressed and sat in the locker room. They can't sit on the bench, which is a goofy NHL rule, which I don't understand, but whatever. They actually were dressed, ready to go in case there was an injury, and they would come out of the locker room and play.
Paul, I do wonder, like, if I think they probably will have to keep an E-Bug anyway if, like, you know, it's the other team. Like, all of a sudden, is Colton Ellis suiting up for the other team?
Right. I'm assuming there would, even if both teams had three goalies, I think they will have to have an E-Bug anyway, but it's not like they can't use their third goaltender and have to use the E-Bug. They can use their third goaltender.
Yeah, I was just wondering about that. Of like, it probably would be the other team, and the next thing you know, a Leafs employee dresses for the Hurricanes or something like that, except on a more extreme version.
Never forget.
But, Paul, keeping on with Kekalainen and everything that is that's going on there, the three-goalie system, you know, him mentioning that that's probably going to be something there. But his thoughts on Devon Levi and how that situation is going to go. You've made the comment a couple times, you know, like if you're Levi and you see everything that unfolded, you'd be probably a bit upset about this sort of thing. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on this, Paul, but what do you think the Sabres would be doing for Devon Levi at this point?
Probably looking for a trade. You know, you do have to pass him through waivers, he or Ellis, if you want to send them down to Rochester. I think it's rather obvious who is ahead of who on the depth chart. So, and it's not Levi. So, you know, he talked nicely about him, everything. Talked about the development of a young goaltender. And, you know, the Sabres finally got that development right. They didn't in the beginning, but they figured it out and got it right. And, but I don't see a future for him.
It's weird with Levi now, Paul. I mean, for a long time, while he maybe wasn't with Buffalo, he'd be a main talking point of stuff coming forward. But after this year, the fact that Lyon and Lukanen both had strong years, Ellis was good for them, and of course they're just going on to win. It did feel like Levi sort of was forgotten about, and then it even got worse as other Rochester players were coming up performing well for them, and Levi is sort of over in the corner. It is almost weird, especially with how his career for the Sabres started. He was seen as almost the savior-level player, right? We're comparing him to Ryan Miller and his college career, but we're having to do it a little bit differently because of the games he played. It's just it's very strange how it maybe is all playing out. Paul, last thing.
Well, the other thing is, too, I've talked to some scouts who in many cases do not think he's an NHL goalie or will be an NHL goalie. So that might be part of it too, that he's just hasn't developed the way folks have thought he would. I mean, remember Cal Peterson?
Yep.
He was the next coming of Dominic Hasek, and fans got really, really upset that he left and did not sign with the Sabres out of college. And he's played a handful NHL games, and he also is not an NHL goaltender. So, a lot of the hyped goaltenders is just that, but you know, you never know. Maybe Levi will get an opportunity somewhere and become an NHL goaltender and prove those people wrong.
Goalies continue to be super, super weird. Paul, last thing for Kekalainen, we actually did get some injury updates. I was wondering if we would. The guys that were speaking in the morning were a little more, I don't even say coy, just not really giving too much away. Tage mentions he has back issues, but with Kekalainen, we did actually get like some definitive stuff.
Yeah, there was a grade 3 ankle sprain for Power, and I don't know how he got through it, but he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, and got through it and played well. He didn't just get through it.
Yeah.
I mean, he played well. It's just amazing he was able to play the way he is on an ankle like that.
But, Paul, he's not tough enough.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I think he proved his toughness there. Carrick tried to come back too soon. You know, he wanted to give it a go and tried, but he couldn't do it. Stanley They didn't say what, but had an injury where he just couldn't go anymore. And apparently he did not really let the Sabres know it was as bad as it was until the season was over. But, that maybe speaks to why, you know, what we were seeing in the Montreal series when finally they just had to pull him out. He had one. What am I missing? It seems like, Danforth had a second surgery. It was more than a broken kneecap. There was a knee problem also. So he had two surgeries, which held him to 4 games all season. And I think that might be it.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about Levi being a forgotten guy, but Danforth, as you mentioned, 4 games this year, and I think Bulldog on his preseason lineup sheet, he had Danforth on there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, forgot about him being on the team, which is a real shame. It was such a strong year.
And one of the reasons Lindy Ruff wanted him was for faceoffs. Oh. He's very good at faceoffs, and that was one of the reasons he wanted him on the team.
Oh, well, and that came back to bite the Sabres a little bit. On to Ruff, though, he did speak as well right before Kekalainen. I don't think it was too much of a surprise, Paul. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I thought it was pretty clear they were going to bring Lindy back as long as Lindy wanted to keep coaching.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Kekalainen said it was a no-brainer, and that's the way we all thought that, you know, and Lindy Ruff wanted to do it, but he had to check with his wife first to make sure, you know, she wasn't tired of him coaching or whatever. And she said, nope, do it. Go for it. And as soon as he got that word, it was just, okay, let's figure it out. I don't think it took long to figure out, and he got his contract.
Was it he that said it or his wife said it, that he still has the sickness, which I found really
good? His wife said it.
Yeah, I found that good. I'm like, that's I think that's probably how most coaches would describe it, because you hear about the coaching lifestyle. I think most would describe it as a sickness.
Yeah, that's what you got the sickness. You got to do it. Go on. Go do it.
Kekalainen, I've got one more here. He's asked about, you know, where can they get an upgrade for either the roster or the staff this season? And it does seem like, you know, obviously the Lindy extension's done, but Kekalainen said that there probably could be some retooling of the staff, or that there might be some changes made there. In addition, Paul, what do you think about that kind of comment there?
Yeah, it seems like he's going to expand the front office is what I got from that. And it's like some guys have already been hired, but he said we have others. And he goes, it'd probably just be better to do it all at once when we announce it. So he said, we're just not going to announce it one at a time. So, you know, whatever he may be doing front office-wise or analytics-wise or scouting-wise or whatever it may be, it will be coming soon and we'll hear about it.
I did like Lindy's comments, though. I know this has been a big talking point online and amongst fans and even here in this room as well. The Sabres assistant coaches, you know, how much did Lindy have say in the current assistants and, you know, what's going on? Now, of course, it's not all Appert. He may not even really be dealing with the power play, but the power play woes and, you know, what are they doing there? Lindy, though, sounded really appreciative of the staff and kind of sounded like he really didn't want to change any of it.
Yeah, and Seth Appert, I think, actually, had Lindy Ruff left or retired or whatever, I think they would have shifted him to head coach. I think Lindy Ruff thinks a lot of Seth Appert. I try to tell people, but they just don't listen. It is not Seth Appert's power play. Lindy Ruff, he'll sit down with the staff, and they'll talk about the penalty kill and the power play. But at the end of the day, Lindy Ruff decides what the power play is going to be doing and how it's going to be doing it. Same thing with the penalty kill. And then there are coaches that will coach Lindy Ruff's power play and will coach Lindy Ruff's penalty kill. And that's the way it goes. And it's not like football where you have like offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators or anything like that. It's different. It's just the coaches coach what the head coach wants them to coach. Now, as I said, they all talk about it. And Lindy Ruff will listen to input, you know, on everything. But at the end of the day, he decides how it's going to be set up.
And Paul, I mean, you mentioned, too, that Ruff has a lot of respect for Seth Appert. There were multiple times, at least from what I saw sitting in the press box, but also on TV as well, in those timeouts, a lot of times it's Appert that is getting on the whiteboard with the team as well. And so I think that also points to, even, you know, if Ruff were to leave, Appert is maybe the guy that they have in mind there. But I think it is right to point out, Appert has done a lot of it behind the scenes. And yeah, it's not apples to apples with football. They have their different roles. You maybe will have a guy like a goalie coach who handles the goalies. You maybe won't necessarily have a power play coach who handles all of that. And it should also be said.
Appert was very successful as coach of the Rochester Americans in like helping some of these guys, you know, get going in their careers and learning the game and those types of things. And they went to the Eastern Conference Finals under him, you know, in the playoffs. So, and Rochester hadn't had much playoff success either until he got them there. So, you know, he was a good development coach down there. And as Lindy Ruff said, when he was up for the Adams Trophy, he immediately said, I can't do this without all the coaches around me. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the ones we sit down, we collaborate, we talk. And gave them a lot of credit for helping, you know, to make this team successful.
And it should be said, too, even with the power play, it got better towards the end of the year. Once they, I think, got all the pieces in place that they wanted to, namely, I think the playmakers with Benson or Austin even before that, it really started to hum, Paul. It became a strength for them. Not the ultimate strength, but it definitely wasn't a weakness.
And it went on straight. I mean, you remember Jeremy White and I would always kid at the – he's like flipping out in the power play. But Jeremy, you realize they've scored in 9 out of 10 games on the power play. And I'd be kidding. And the problem was is they'd go 1 for 4 in the power play. They'd score the one, and the other three looked like they've never been on the power play before.
Yep.
And I think that's what people were scratching their head over. But they went on a pretty nice streak there for a while, and their power play was – for the most part this season, around the middle of the pack. You know, 16th, 15th. It went down to around 18th near the end. But it wasn't the worst power play in the NHL by far. I mean, it was middle of the pack power play.
It's kind of funny you mentioned where they end up in the season, Paul. It's where they end their playoffs, middle of the pack. They go from 4%, which was dead last in the first round, to 7th. So right there in the middle of the pack, because they do fix some things.
Yeah.
But they'll be looking to fix some things, definitely.
Yeah,
I mean, they know it can be better. There's no question about it. And they're going to be spending the summer looking to make it better.
And I do think that a good piece of it, though, too, Paul, is the players themselves sometimes just have to make some better decisions on the power play in terms of entry in particular, you know, recognizing when you need the drop pass, when don't you need it. And I think that Montreal series, they did better with that. Like, Dahlin would not always do the drop pass. He would find the entry point if it was there and just take it. It does look like it improved, partially because there were some, you know, changes within the personnel, but it's also because they were making better decisions on their own.
Yeah, definitely. And they were also competing better. I mean,
right.
What showed, you know, the game they scored 4 power play goals, they also gave up a shorthanded goal, and the shorthanded goal was because they didn't compete. They had 2 Sabres on 1 Canadian. The 1 Canadian won the battle, got the puck, came down, and scored on a 2-on-1. And it was all that they didn't compete hard for the puck, and then they scored 4 power play goals after that night. But for the most part, I did see better compete, which I think helped them start scoring some goals.
Speaking of 2-on-1s, Paul, this is the last thing I want to ask you on Lindy. I was not thrown, but I was a little surprised at how honest he was to open up the press conference talking about, you know, where he thought his mind was when it was 2-2 and the Thompson-Benson moment, that 2-on-1 in overtime. I was a little surprised at how open he was about where his mindset was at those points.
Yeah, when he saw that from the bench, he thought that they were going to win the hockey game right then and there. Yeah, you know, it's Tage Thompson coming down. And Tate Thompson has done that drag move before and scored on it. Now, I think, as I told you, I would prefer, since it's Tage Thompson and he has an absolute rocket for a shot, him come through the circle and let it rip, because he has scored from there many times too, coming down. So that would be the preference I would have had for him. But, you know, you have to understand, he has scored on that drag, and he lost the puck on the drag move but got it back. But by the time he got it back, he was right on top of the goaltender.
Yeah.
There really wasn't much he could do with the puck other than kind of put it back in his pads because he was so close. You know, Lindy Ruff said, he goes, when he saw that opportunity coming, he thought they were going to win the game right then and there.
Yeah, that play, I think, is going to stick with me for a while. There's, you know, I've already kind of moved off of the Malenstein situation, the kick goal discussion early in the game. It really has come down to that moment where it's like, and I'll say it, Paul, too, and I think maybe Bulldog and Mike said this to you yesterday as well. I don't think Tage ever had any anticipation or any idea of to pass it to Benson. I think it was all him, and that's where I'm sort of with you. I wish he would have just ripped it.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. That's mm-hmm. fine. I mean, there are too many two-on-ones. They haven't even gotten a shot because they tried to get fancy with it. When you're him, you just got to let that go. But the other thing I heard that I liked and is so true, it never should have come down to – they feel it never should have come down to number one playing game seven and number two one shot because you lost three games at home mm-hmm. and you had the lead in game five. And you had your 40-goal scorer coming down on a breakaway, pulling the movie, pulls quite a bit. But the difference was he couldn't get the puck over the goaltender, where usually he does. And that would make it 4-2. Now they're blowing the roof off the place again. Now Montreal has to change their style. Who knows where it goes? But, I think there's a pretty good chance it would have unfolded differently had Thompson scored on that breakaway to make it 4-2. So, you know, they said there were so many places, especially losing three games at home, where they could have changed the series and not even be talking about an overtime or a one shot to score wins the game.
No, and I think that's totally right. It was ultimately a tough series for Tage. The points don't really paint that picture at all. It is those moments, though, the two on ones or the breakaway. You know, you're the 40 goal scorer. You're the guy. And you have to come up in one of those two situations. And he doesn't.
By the time he was done, he was the second leading scorer in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's honestly, Paul, remarkable from some of those games he had. Because I'm with you. I thought at the end of the Boston series, he was very, very good. He wasn't necessarily racking up the points, though, to end that Boston series. It was secondary assists.
He had 7 points in six games. Mm-hmm.
But it was
just like Tuck did. That's yeah. over. I mean, the when he had... When he jumped into second place in scoring, he was on a 102-point pace over 82 games. But a lot, as you said, a lot of the fans wouldn't have guessed that.
No.
That's a pretty good pace.
4-point performance in game six will help that. It will help.
It helps all the scores. The number one scorer, Marner, had high point games also.
Yeah, I think he had.
That's why you're the leading scorer, because you have high point games.
If you can score in bunches, it'll always help.
Yep. Paul, last thing, we're talking about the players here. We did have a lot of the bigger guys talk yesterday morning. Were there any big takeaways from the likes of Darlene, Thompson, Tuck, and the rest?
No, they of course are very disappointed, but they're encouraged. They know that, you know, now they'll be better prepared for the playoffs moving on. And, you know, they went from nothing. They went from last place in December to being the second best team in the conference and the number one team in the Atlantic Division. That's just not done. They by far had the best record from December 9th on, by about 6 or 7 points, so over Carolina in the NHL. So, you know, there are a lot of things for them to be proud of, but it's hard to be proud of anything when you just lost like that. But at the end of the day, every team in the playoffs loses like that, except the team that's carrying on around the Stanley Cup.
Paul, there was one comment yesterday from Darlene that it's more of like a paying attention around the league sort of thing. He mentions, you know, I'm not the one skating around with a broken back. Very clearly a reference to Cutter Gauthier playing for Anaheim with fractured L1 and L2 on his spine.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way these playoffs roll. That's mm-hmm. what people do. I mean, they find a way to play through pain, and you know, whether you get a shot to play or whatever it might be. But look at all the injuries the Flyers had that
internal
guys
bleeding,
were playing with.
Just incredible. Jeez. How many injuries they had. But yeah. Paul, we are on to the off season, and hopefully it is a very, very exciting one. We haven't had too many exciting off seasons as Sabres fans, but this one is pointing to at least could be interesting, if not very, very exciting. So, Paul, thank you so much for jumping on with us, and go rest up. It's been a long couple of weeks for you.
It certainly has. Take care.
Can't wait to ask him about all the trade ideas he has.
Oh, I can't wait. I want to hear exactly what you give up for Robert Thomas. We're going to get there.
Thank you, Paul.
Paul Hamilton's appearance on WGR is, of course, brought to you by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this. Or if he has another trade idea, Nico Hischier, I'd love to hear his thoughts.
Paul, what's it going to take to get Austin Matthews? What's right. your thoughts?
803-0550, the number to call. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll keep rolling with the Sabres as well. As I thought there was a number of comments I really liked, including one not from yesterday but the day prior, Josh Doan, that I really, really enjoyed and sort of points to what I'm talking about with this offseason. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer on WGR.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Good morning. Sun's out. It's Jeremy and Joe. Hockey tonight. Montreal and Carolina after Vegas wins last night. Take a 1-0 series lead over Colorado. And maybe you need a breath from hockey and you'll watch the Knicks tonight. I don't know. Paul Hamilton now on the Western Hotline. I don't know, Paul. It would be tough for you at all to watch these two teams tonight? You'll
no,
be fine.
Not at all. It's I don't get into that.
Yeah, I know.
I tried watching hockey yesterday, but after a 12-hour day at the arena and writing 3 or 4 articles, I sat down in the chair. I maybe remember 30 seconds of the game.
Right. You're a professional. You're going to have no problem with this game tonight.
No, not at all.
This series between Montreal and Carolina. The fans are pretty split, though. It's, you know, in terms of rooting interest, there is still a lot of Carolina bitterness, but I don't know. We'll get
even
to everything.
For Lindy Ruff, there's Carolina bitterness. He was talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, he wanted it. He wanted that series.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you wonder at all? We'll get, of course, to everything that happened yesterday and all the comments from Yarmo and Lindy and the extension. Do you think at all about what the Sabres would have looked like in a series against Carolina? They just play so different than everybody, and they are just so rested. Like, man, if they don't – they've – I think it's like 4 times, Paul, they've reached the conference finals with Brind'Amour, and they've won like 1 game in those 4 series. Like it feels like if they don't do it now, they're never going to do it.
It's been goaltending. I mean, for the first time in the playoffs, they've gotten goaltending. Freddie Anderson's a very good regular season goalie. He's been awful in the playoffs for not just Carolina, but other teams.
Toronto.
But this year, he has been absolutely lights out. And a little bit like Bobrovsky. He was the same way. And then Alex Lyon started the playoffs. It didn't go well. Bobrovsky came in, and all of a sudden he was a playoff goalie for the first time ever and wound up with 2 Stanley Cups. So it can happen. It has happened. And so far it is happening for Freddie Anderson. But that's the difference. Buffalo and Carolina has changed the dynamic a little bit. It used to be Carolina just dominated the Sabres no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems like Buffalo is able to beat them here,
mm-hmm.
but not able to beat them in Carolina yet.
Oh, we would have been having a field day with that for especially these playoffs, right? Because they can't win at home and they win on the road, but they haven't won in Carolina still, right? Since like 2016, maybe?
Yeah, Lindy Ruff brought up a 2-1 game that had Thompson scored, it might have, you know, he had a great chance and it might have changed that dynamic.
Is that the Brandon Bussey game where he like stood on his head? Yeah.
Yeah, so but you know, you can't go by all that kind of stuff because look at how well the Sabres played at home this year until the playoffs. And then and Kekalainen was right to say and I'm glad he did. Yeah, that quick whistle certainly gave this – at least it denied the Sabres a chance to try to defend a 1-goal lead for the last half of the third period to win a hockey game, which is something they're very good at. But at the end of the day, Buffalo had other chances to win that series, including don't go 0-3 at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what he said. He goes, if we're being honest, there never should have been a 7th game or a last shot, or an overtime, because he said it was there for us, and he said we had the lead in game 5 in the first period, and didn't win the hockey game. So he said it's more than just losing on the last shot of a game in overtime.
Yeah, when Lindy and Jarmo both said that, Paul, I thought mostly about Game 5. Because that's the game where you're at home, you had played so well in the first half of the game. Thompson has that breakaway to go up 4-2.
Yes.
Like I feel like when they were saying all that, they had Game 5 in mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And Lindy has talked about that Thompson opportunity. And sure, if that game becomes 4-2, now what happens in that game? We don't know.
Right.
But I don't know if it's going to unfold the way it did with a 4-2 lead, because now Montreal has to change. They have to change their style. They have to go for it a little bit. The fans will be blowing the roof off the place again at 4-2. So, yeah, that could have changed the whole dynamic of that hockey game.
Yeah. So the news of yesterday, Paul, before the press conferences had begun, at least with the GM and the coach, was Lindy signing his 2-year extension, which is not really much of a surprise to anybody, but now we have it official. I just feel like, Paul, Lindy deserves a lot of credit. Like, that this season happened and that he gets to a second contract in his second stint here, because it really does feel like he's evolved a lot as a coach. Like, even Jarmo yesterday talking about, like, data and how open he is to that, and the players maybe giving them more space or being easier on them than he would have been in his first stint. Like, I don't know, for you, like, how different does it feel like Lindy is from what he was 15, 20 years ago, and do you feel like that's the reason why it ended up working for him?
Well, there were many that felt when Jarmo got hired that that was the end of Lindy Ruff, that he wasn't going to survive the week. Because this all hadn't started yet, or just barely had started, you know, when Kekalainen came on board. I think they had won 3. But a lot of folks thought, well, Tortorella's going to come in and coach the Sabres, you know, and that's going to be that, because Tortorella worked with Kekalainen in Columbus. So we went from that dynamic to what, as you mentioned, you know, and even in the playoffs, it just seemed like everything Lindy Ruff did was the right thing to do. Even when it didn't appear to be the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, but then after it was done, I was like, yep, that was the right thing to do. You know, and he just kept pushing the right buttons, and it just, you know, seemed to work for them. But, you know, just the way, just, you know, you want to say, well, something Lindy Ruff did. Look at the way the Sabres play in the offensive zone. No other team plays like that except the Sabres, and it messes up the other team. When they can get that rotation going in the offensive zone, and you got Rasmus Dahlin standing at the goal line, tipping in a Samuelson shot from the point, you got two defensemen, you know, tipping pucks in, you know, and because the forward is back on the rotation covering up, if you don't have really good communication defensively, you're going to mess that up. And it really helped the Sabres, and, well, the Sabres defensemen were second in the league in goal scoring.
Right. To make a maybe a sloppy comparison to the NBA, Paul, Steve Kerr, when he became the Warriors coach, I think he told Steph Curry at one point, like, you're allowed to shoot from anywhere. You don't have a bad shot. Like, I'm giving you license to do, like, I trust you to do, to make your decision on this. I feel like one of the things Lindy's done that might not even feel like it's that hard to do, but not every coach would do, is he gives his top four defensemen license to kind of, like, move around the zone the way they want to. Like, when Ralph Kruger was the coach, I remember, like, wasn't it that defensemen, like, he almost stapled them to the blue line, like, don't get up in the play? And Lindy's coached some defensive teams in the past, and I think he recognized what he had, and he doesn't want to limit them in any way.
Yeah, it's like, don't you have Rasmus Dahlin, who moves pretty well? Why do you want him just to stay back all the time, type of a thing? But, yeah, he did, and you know, the players bought in finally. It took a while. It took them a year and a half to buy into Lindy Ruff and his system and what he wanted to do, but they did. A lot has been made of Calgary, where Lindy Ruff sat down with the leaders. And they had some tough conversations, and then Rasmus Dahlin said, we're going out. And he took the leaders of this team, and they went out to some restaurant or whatever, and they hashed it out. And the guys have said some of it wasn't comfortable conversation. They hashed it out on what needed to be done to turn this thing around. And Rasmus Dahlin said yesterday that he basically said, stop complaining, and why don't we just do it ourselves? Stop complaining about everything, because everything's going bad. And Dahlin goes, you know, you want to say, well, it's not my fault, it's that guy's fault, or it's that guy's fault. He goes, stop it. He goes, let's just go out there and do play the game the way the game's supposed to be played. And, you know, they all hashed it out and agreed. And from that point forward, here we are.
Paul Hamilton with us. Lindy at 950 wins, by the way. This extension probably means he'll get to 1,000, right? Like, he might not even get it next year, but as long as he gets into that second year, feels like he'll get to that 1,000 mark, which only two coaches right now have ever done. Paul Maurice, though, Paul, is going to get there too, and he's still a young man for the job. So that's your top four right now in coaching wins all time. You know, like the message yesterday felt like, whether it was from Lindy or Yarmo, the players, that like they recognize that even though that was hard, what they just did, that they're not guaranteed anything next year, right? Like, and what every player is going to sound like at the end of the season, but I don't know. It felt very sincere from the players and from the coaching staff that they know the right way to play, and it's not like, okay, we did it. We broke the drought. We proved we're good. Now we can kind of, you know, return to what we were doing before.
Well, Kyle Aposo used to be the big on that, and he would say at the end of the season, look at, yeah, we might have improved or whatever, but it means nothing. He goes, next season you start from scratch. And he says it's as simple as that. And nothing is guaranteed that you're going to pick up right where you left off because the same team isn't showing up next year. It never does. You know, there will be some different players on this team. And so, you know, it'll be a different dynamic. So you have to start from square one, understanding that there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work that goes into it. And, but, mm-hmm. you know, what will help, I think, in the playoffs, you know, if they make the playoffs, they'll know what to expect now. The first year of the journey is over. So the ones where, well, what's going to happen here? Or how do we handle Montreal's crowd? Or how do we do this? Or how do we do that? Or how's this going to be? Or you know, maybe you weren't as loose as you should have been to start with. And as Rasmus Dahlin said, I realize we're just playing hockey. He said, I had this big thing in my head. And he goes, by the second game, I just said to myself, we're playing a hockey game. Just go out and play. And, you know, stop making this bigger than it. I mean, it's big, but stop making this different than it needs to be. Don't complicate it. Just play hockey. And so he goes, that was the biggest difference from him. But they know all that stuff now. So now they can move forward and be better for it next time they do it.
Paul Hamilton with us. Jarmo Kekäläinen yesterday as well, Paul. And on the extension, so let's... that are eligible. Let's start with Alex Tuch. How did Yarmo sound to you on Tuch and his interest level of getting something done there?
Definitely interested, but careful. Careful in how he was going to talk about it. You know, he said that Tuch is important part of their success. He wants to sign him, but his quote was, we have to come to an agreement. That is the type of contract that we can still make our team better, and hopefully we can do that. Well, what does that mean? That means there's other guys that need to be signed long-term. He wants Bo Byram long-term. Now, he would not count against next year's cap, but still. He wants Benson long-term. Mm-hmm. And if he signs a whale of a deal for Tuch, all that can't happen. Unless you trade somebody, unless you trade Norris or trade somebody else. So that's what he means by that. It has to be a contract that will make the team better, and better meaning having other key players under contract too.
And when you pair that with what Tuch said, did Tuch sound like a guy that would be willing to take less to stay here? I'm sure he would, but it's just going to come down to, I guess, how much less? Because you've said this for years, like free agency can't get dumb, and he's the number one free agent forward. Like, if he really wanted to cash out, I'm sure he can find a team that would go crazy. So it's going to come down to, I guess, how much of a discount he's willing to take versus the Sabres are asking him to take.
Yeah, and we are not privy, nor should we be, to conversations he has with his family and you know, his wife's from another part of the country. I have no idea what she's saying or what she's thinking. And as I said, that's none of our business. You know, there are a lot of, as he said, there are a lot of factors he has to factor in, and he has a lot of thinking to do. He does love this franchise. He loves being here. He was the guy, when we came into the locker room after elimination, who was still sitting there in his full uniform, staring at the floor. So that's how he took it. Mm-hmm. You know, he took it hard. And, you know, but where are they? As far as is it money that they're talking about? Is it number of years? Are the Sabres saying, yeah, we'll give you the money, but how about 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. not 8 years? You know, we don't know that. Is it money? Are the Sabres offering under 9 and Tuck wants around 11? Mm-hmm. Again, we don't know where that is. So where is the rub? We don't know. You know, as he said, he's going to do what's best for his family, what that means. We don't know until it happens. So there's a lot of factors involved here, but they still have time. I mean, yeah, July 1st is coming, but it's still, a month and a half away.
Yep.
So there's still time to get this figured out if there is a deal to be made.
Right. I mentioned yesterday that the year that Stamkos was supposed to hit the open market and everybody was gearing up for that, that went to like midnight of the night before he was set to be a free agent, and he actually didn't end up making it to the market. So that,
and the Sabres had one of those meetings. He met with the Sabres, yes.
Right. Right. So that could be Tuck, right? Like where we get to June 30th and we think, okay, it hasn't happened yet, so maybe it's over, and then maybe he signs like right before. That could very well happen. The Byram extension, I guess I'm not surprised by it. I guess I wondered though, Paul, like what Kekalainen's attitude would be on it, because they had agreed to trade for Colton Parayko at the deadline. And there could have been retained salary there, I guess. But if not, that was a $6.5 million defenseman they were set to acquire. And I remember when that happened, I thought, man, are they going to pay Byram if they add Parayko on that deal? Like, how much money are you going to have tied up there? So that's why I wondered what their attitude would be towards Byram. But, man, Kekalainen could not have sounded, I think, more committed to the idea that they want to keep him long term.
Well, there were people who think Parayko did the Sabres a favor there. They, you know, they're you know, writers and people that cover the Blues. Some of them just thought, you know, the Sabres probably dodged a bullet there by not picking it. They aren't real, especially at this point in his career, they aren't real up on the way he plays, so, or like the way he plays. So who knows how that would have gone. But, I mean, Kekalainen is a person, he said it before, he said it again yesterday, that you build from the back out. And he feels he has, in the top four defensemen, probably the best in the league. And he wants to keep that moving forward. He thinks it's very important to keep that moving forward.
Right. And three, of course, are under contract now. The Samuelson deal suddenly looks amazing at the salary he's at, which is incredible a year later. And Byram, I don't know. I haven't really thought about like what the money would be on that. I'm certain,
yeah,
though,
I haven't either.
It would be a big chunk of change.
Sure.
At least what's power at, like 8.3,
yeah.
8.4?
And Byram's got to decide what he wants to do.
How about that? Like, Samuelson is the bigger revelation this year just because of where he came from, Paul. But, man, a year ago, we would have been talking to you about, like, what he's getting traded for and how he wasn't maybe happy here. And the turnaround for him, maybe the attitude of staying here and again, like, not on the radar at all, I think, the idea of him being moved, versus last year, it kind of felt like we were almost expecting it to happen.
The turnaround for him was the Thompson hit. He took an absolute beating about that, not only from fans, but and I remember discussing with you guys, can he recover from that inside the room? There are a lot of guys who couldn't recover from that inside the room. Thompson was not happy that folks did not come to his aid. And there were some very blunt and serious conversations in that room. And to me, that's what really turned this team around as a group. I think they became closer. It never happened again. They were all for one and one for all in scrums. They may not win the scrum, but they got there and they were all there. And he became a different person. I think he became a different leader. I think he became a different player. And he told his teammates it will never happen again. He was embarrassed by it. He told the media it'll never happen again. And I think we've seen since that point a different Sam. Because remember last year, Lindy Ruff at the end of the year said, the last X amount of games, maybe 20, 30, Samuelson was great. And he was. And you hate for something like that have to happen. But if you want to talk about a turning point in a franchise, I think that might have been the turning point in this franchise.
Yeah, and Samuelson. Lindy said somewhere recently that one of their – they have like four slogans this year. One of them was grab a guy, which I think is pretty much all of that. Like just when something's happening, just grab a guy. The other thing interesting yesterday, Paul, I mean among many things, was their comments about the goaltending situation. How strong do you feel like they were on wanting to do three goalies again going forward?
Now that I didn't think of what they're talking about. I knew the e-bug thing was going to happen, that you had to have an e-bug. Mm-hmm. It never occurred to me you're better off probably having three goalies. And then they're talking about, you know what? Yeah, that's probably the way to go. Because they made it work this year. And I bet a lot of teams are going to do it that way because your e-bug cannot have NHL experience. So why not just have a third goalie?
Right. So
and where you can pop him. You may still have to have an e-bug in the building, but he now becomes kind of the fourth guy because you can put you can bring the third guy down from the press box. Interestingly enough, you can't put him on the bench, but he can dress and sit in the locker room.
That's what I was wondering. I didn't know the rule on that because I had saw that e-bug couldn't have NHL experience, and I thought, okay, so that means Ellis couldn't play if something happened.
No, he's not the e-bug. He's on the roster.
Right. So and you would be allowed to put him in if both guys got.
Yeah,
injured.
That happened twice this year where both once Lucan and once Lyon where they came after an injury they came down they dressed and sat in the locker room. I still scratch my head wondering why they can't sit at the bench, but whatever, this is the NHL.
It
doesn't make sense, but it did happen twice this year where they were dressed and ready to go in the locker room.
Right. So do you feel like they're going to go three goalies next year the way
they sounded?
I
think there's no question. They almost, without saying we're definitely doing it, they're saying it's really a big consideration. And when I thought about it, I go, why didn't I think of that? Yeah, that's the way to do it. I think definitely I would be pretty sure we're going to see a three-goalie system next year here again.
And would you expect it's the same three?
Yeah. They like Ellis. They kept him all year, so that tells me they like him. Kekalainen says he likes Levi, but, you know, Levi's a development goaltender, but still Levi has to pass waivers. Next year, has Levi been asked to be traded? That was not discussed. I asked Kekalainen if Kesselring still wants to be here, and he talked a lot about Kesselring and the conversations he's had, but he didn't let me know if he's asked to be traded or not. He didn't answer that part of the question.
Lindy, you know, though, Lindy definitely, though, and not that this is a surprise, Lindy definitely gave that there was frustration from him, like not being in the lineup this year. And also with the injuries. Like it definitely felt like he was going through it this year mentally.
You wouldn't want him on the team if he wasn't mad that he wasn't playing, or any player's going to be mad through that situation. Kekalainen said, you know, he had some conversation throughout the year with him saying, you know, well, you know, he thought he played as a top four defenseman at times at Utah. I think he thought, and I think they thought, that's what his role was going to be here. But Ben Samuelson stepped up, and now there's not a top four role. So he said, he's told him, now you got to change your thinking and change, you know, you got to be able to work as a 5-6 type of a defenseman. And once you have that role, you want more. He goes, I want players who want more. He goes, that's a great sign that he wants more. And, you know, so he said it is a frustrating time for him, especially with the injuries and the way they put him down and the first time he's really had to deal with injuries. But as I said, we don't have any further clue if Kesselring still wants to be, and he did not talk. So we don't have a further clue whether he still wants to be a Sabre or doesn't. Maybe that's a clue right there that they didn't have him talk because they had other injured players. Kulik talked, Oslin talked, but Kesselring didn't. So I found that interesting also.
Right. Lastly, Paul, on the injury front, the only, unless I'm missing one, the only real like major injury that we found out about was Power, which we were expecting, and that was what, a grade 3 sprain that he had?
You talk about some toughness there. That is not easy to play through that and to play well. Not only play through it, but play well. And Power credited a lot of people, their staff, his wife, and a bunch of people to help him get ready for games. But you wouldn't have known he had a grade 3 sprain with the way he played. And he powered through it, and good for him.
Yeah. And World Championships, is it just Hellenius that I seen for that?
It seems like, because they're so far into it now. They would add, for any player, you got to hold a roster spot.
Right.
You know, so usually after the first round, guys go over, definitely. Mm-hmm. But usually not after the second round. And so he's supposed to play. I think he said he's going to play tomorrow.
Okay. That's quick.
For Finland.
So basically shows up and he's like right on the ice. So.
Yeah, well, he's ready. I mean, he's been playing games and practicing. Now, you know, Tage Thompson, first of all, he's injured. Second of all, he's been playing since last May because he had the World Championships last May. It's been a full year for him. And he admitted, he goes, yeah, there were times he did hit a wall this season. And he said that's when his teammates were there for him and helped him through it. He goes, you know, he needed to get help through it, and he got through it. He had to power through because, I mean, he got off an airplane from the Olympics in the White House and all that, and he was in a game that night against New Jersey. A lot of people thought, well, maybe he and Hughes won't play that game. They both did because it was an important game for the Sabres, and he wanted to be there for his teammates, and he scored in the game. But he did admit there were times he did hit a wall with everything he's gone through in the last calendar year.
Yeah, he played exactly 100 games this year. If you include the Olympics, he played exactly 100 games.
And if you want to include the World Championships last May, more. I mean, it's going to be more.
Well, next year it's an 84-game season, so. Right? Am
it
I
is.
Right? So you
got
to reset a little bit.
There were some people. We were sitting around talking. We had a lot of time to talk in the last 2 days. You know, a lot of teams, what are teams going to do with three goalies? Forget about the e-bug for the 84 games. Mm-hmm. Does that make you think maybe you need more goalies? Maybe, you know, it's going to be a harder type of a schedule where you might need it, because Buffalo isn't the only team with three goalies this year with the condensed schedule. But now with 84 games, are more teams going to want to have a third goalie? And then if you throw the e-bug into the conversation, I think, I don't know. Well, we don't know, but I think it's possible. We could have a lot of teams with three goalies.
Yep. Paul Hamilton with us. Thank you, Paul, as always, and we will chat soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Wes Herr Hotline. The Sabres are done with locker room cleanout and press conferences. And we heard from Lindy, we heard from Yarmo, so now it's on to the offseason, and usually you don't get action until the Stanley Cup Final is over, so should have a couple of weeks here. But the draft here in Buffalo is just over a month away. On Lindy, when we come back, your phone calls, if you're on hold, stay there, we'll get to you. And on Aaron Rodgers, making us suffer, but only for one more year.
If that.
Do we believe him?
No. He's going to go into a cave next offseason and be like, I got one more.
We'll talk about Rodgers and then more. Coming up here on WGR.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.